Drive into summer savings at Burr Brothers Tire and Service with unbeatable discounts on all major tire brands like Goodyear, Bridgestone, Firestone, Pirelli, and more. Visit any Burr Brothers today because these summer tire deals are hot and won't last long. Burr Brothers Tire and Service. Complete auto care done better.
You're free now. Free to stream beyond your wildest dreams. Free to be everything you imagine and then some. That's how it feels to have Quantum Fiber. Your world unleashed. Learn more at quantumfiber.com. Limited availability. Service in select locations only.
And now, it's 10 a.m.
Let's just get down to it.
And it's time for your sports fix.
Strap yourselves in, folks.
From two guys who have covered the teams you're passionate about for years.
We are professionals.
This is Jake Scott and Ben Anderson on 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
The KSL Sports Zone. Jake Scott, Ben Anderson. Thanks for making us a part of your Friday. What's going on over there, Ben?
Doing well. How are you?
I'm both happy about something and personally offended at the same time.
All right.
The Orlando Magic scored 121 points.
Yes, they did.
And they made us look really smart.
They broke 90, which was the goal.
The Cavs did not break 90. They scored 83. And so I was super excited about that. But I went to social media at halftime for a rare appearance and actually sent out to you something about the Magic having scored 61 points at halftime. And I got no response.
I did
like,
not
nothing.
See this from
I got,
you.
I didn't get a like. I didn't get a yeah, we look smart. I didn't get anything.
There it
is. I feel like a teenager who doesn't get their fulfillment from the likes or whatever like that. You know what I mean? Like but I was super excited about it. I rarely reach out to you on social media and I just feel hurt and rebuffed. And I really am like questioning my own self-confidence, which I don't often do, why that this would hurt my feelings so much.
Boy.
Is this how people feel when they like post a pic and only get, you know, three talks or whatever the thing is? Is that like just hurt and rejected by like not only society but like a friend? Like Tim liked the tweet. He liked it. I didn't tag Tim.
I have been getting a decent amount of Twitter interaction recently, so it did blend into busy mentions sheet, and I apologize. Also, you so rarely tweet, I wouldn't even recognize your avatar when I see it come across. You know what I mean? Like, when it shows up in my mentions and a little tiny circle on my phone says, this face has sent you a tweet or mentioned you, I missed it. I did see you use the Shia LaBeouf gif, the magic gif.
Yeah, I thought it was funny.
It was funny. It had blended in. I had seen the gif, and I did not see
I just
the
didn't
tweet.
Get it. I didn't get any sort of, like, I don't know.
And when he says avatar, he's not talking about the blue people.
Not the blue people.
You know that, right, Jake?
I mean the picture.
You know, I've actually never seen that movie.
Somebody,
you know why I haven't seen that movie? Somebody told me it was just a remake of Fern Gully, The Last Rainforest, and
yeah.
I was like, well, I've seen Fern Gully.
Yeah. And it's long, and it's the whole thing. So I apologize. You're right. I missed that.
So, yeah, that's all.
Okay.
I'm super stoked.
I appreciate you being more interactive on social media, and I apologize for missing it.
I was super stoked about our Magic.
I wrote they were awesome last night. Yeah, they were. It was, you know, you kind of try and do the balancing act of a team goes up 0-2, but how did they win those first two games at home? And then how does game three respond? And the series I always go back to, and you'll remember this, was Jazz Rockets when they beat Yao Ming and Tracy McGrady in seven games. And every game in Houston was close. And every game in Salt Lake was like a 25-point blowout. None of them were close. And you kept thinking, man, I know the Jazz are a better team. Are they going to be able to get a win on the road? And of course, game seven they did. And look, Orlando's been so bad in Cleveland, I'm not sure I can make that same argument.
Can I tell you a funny story about that series real quick?
But the fact that they won by 40 last night makes me think like, oh, this series is not over, and I don't know if Cleveland's going to travel.
I agree with all that. So my co-host that I was doing a show with at the time, Ben, was super into predicting things. Like, his self-worth was on predicting, like, series and things like that. Like, it was a really big deal to him. So before that series, he's like, what's it going to be? And I just flippantly said Jazz in seven just to, like, bother him, because that's not the typical, like, odds are the Jazz didn't have home court advantage. So if the Jazz win the series, it would be in six, right? I mean, he was, like, so bothered. And then that series, it was Jazz in seven.
Yeah.
He was so bothered that I was correct about that. Because I put zero thought into it other than just, like, what prediction would bother him.
The most.
The most.
And you nailed it.
And then it happened.
Blindly throwing darts.
Oh, I couldn't believe it. But you know what? Not to honk our own horn, but we're so right about this series. Like, if Orlando can somehow make shots, they'll beat Cleveland.
Yeah, they should.
And maybe it's like the Jazz. Maybe it's such a home road thing for them or whatever. But absolutely, they could win a series by stealing game seven on the road or whatever. But if they can figure out how to make shots in Cleveland, they'll win.
Cleveland is...
because Cleveland can't stop anybody.
Yeah, they're unimaginably flawed. They are really, really a flawed team.
And Orlando is really equipped to guard them. Cleveland hasn't scored 100 points in the series, Ben.
Yeah, that's crazy.
In three games in the modern NBA, Cleveland has yet to score 100 points. Somehow they're up 2-1 because Orlando is just historically bad at offense. But when it works... I mean, because they weren't the worst offense in the league this year, Ben. I think they were 21st, I want to say. I could go back and look. I looked the other day.
They're not 30.
So it works sometimes.
Yeah. And maybe it just works in Orlando. And maybe that's all they need. Maybe they need to protect home court and take it to a game seven and then hope
and
that
one
you
on
shoot
road.
Well.
Yeah.
Yeah, or hope that Cleveland shoots poorly, which...
But the thing is, I think they could do that in game five.
Yeah, yeah, yes. It doesn't have to be game seven. There's going to be opportunities to do it. Now they have to win game four. You know,
but
Cleveland
that,
will play better in game four than they did game three.
If they steal game five, though, that would require Orlando to win the series to win four in a row. And
that doesn't happen.
I don't think they can shoot well for four games in a row. That's their flaw.
I agree with you. But Cleveland only shot 23% from three last night. Donovan Mitchell was their leading scorer and had 15 points.
All right, let's get out.
No, Donovan had 13. He wasn't even their leading
scorer.
No,
he was terrible. He's 6 of 16. He wasn't their leading scorer, but he did take the most shots, so.
He did get him up.
I've seen that.
Yep.
Joining us now, she covers the Utes for KSLSports.com. She joins us on Fridays, and I'm a big fan of all of her work on the Saturday show with Jake Hatch. Unlike my co-host, Michelle, I'm in full support of the Saturday show. I think it's a great product. I think you do a wonderful job. And I tune in as often as I possibly can. Michelle Bodkin with us.
Oh, thanks.
You're welcome.
I appreciate that.
You are welcome. Ben?
Michelle, Jake was trying to throw me under the bus there, and you skipped over it, so I appreciate you doing that. All right, let's talk NFL draft. Are we going to see a Ute drafted tonight before we even get to day three on Saturday?
You know what? I think we'll maybe see one or two guys have their name called tonight. I think Cole Bishop is perhaps one of them that we see go tonight. Jonah Ellis, I believe, is probably the other one that could go as early as today. And then I think everyone else is kind of... if anyone else goes today, that's you know, just an extra cherry on top. And then for the most part, I think most of Utah's guys will see go sometime tomorrow. And I don't think there's any shame in that, because Utah's shown that they can produce talent that, regardless of whether they get drafted or they're an undrafted free agent, they have some sticking and staying power. So, you know, at the end of the day, I think you just want the opportunity, and Utah trains their guys to be prepared for whatever that opportunity looks like.
Michelle, I am far from a draft expert. And by the way, Michelle has put a lot of work into utes and landing spots in the draft. I would suggest people look into it because you've really done a great job. But I want to ask you specifically about Jonah Ellis, because I don't what are people saying is the downside for him? I don't really get that. He looks like it to me, and I'm far from a draft analyst, but like, I mean, he was so great last year, and he's got the pedigree. And why is he not viewed as going to be taken higher, I guess?
I think he's a bit of a tweener. I think that's honestly what it is. He's a little bit on the big side to be a linebacker. He's a little bit on the small side to be a defensive end. So he's kind of a hybrid guy. And I think the NFL is getting better at figuring out what to do with those types of players. But I think that's really the biggest knock on him. But I think, you know, whoever takes a chance on him, I don't think they're going to be sorry. Like, I think Jonah knows how to work. He's watched his dad do it. You know, he's learned from one of the best, the do's and the don'ts, and has been in a program that, again, is very good at preparing their guys for the next level. So, yes, he's maybe a bit of an odd size for the NFL, but I think he's someone that can absolutely overcome that, and whoever gets them will be pleasantly surprised, or maybe not even pleasantly surprised, but just happy with the pick.
Sione Vaki was really the talk of college football for a couple of weeks there when he took over Utah's offense while still playing defense and was so good, and has faded throughout this draft process to the point where, you know, it's kind of no question that Cole Bishop is going to be the first safety taken for Utah, and we'll see where Sione Vaki goes, if he even goes tonight or tomorrow. What has hurt him in the draft process?
You know, I think it was the poor performance at the combine, and it sounds like, I believe it was a hammy. I heard he was dealing with a hammy at the combine, which kind of slowed him up, but... And obviously, he did much better in his pro day. He put up numbers that was much more in line with what we were expecting out of him. But I think the other part of it, too, is it sounds like he's really set on playing defense at the next level. And he maybe just hasn't shown enough on the defensive side. He was very flashy on the offensive side. And I think we all saw that. And I think, you know, there's no arguing or disagreeing about that. Like, he was phenomenal on the offensive side, and he's solid on the defensive side. But as people have pointed out, you know, 2 years playing safety, and I think he only has one interception to show for it. So, you know, I think the NFL is questioning a little bit. Can you come down with the ball in big moments? Can you force a fumble? I don't believe he had a single forced fumble in those 2 years. And those are kind of some big markers for defensive players, and specifically like safeties and linebackers. You want to see guys that are able to produce that. Now, on the other hand, you know, he has great closing speed. I feel like he has an eye for where the ball is going to go, and can make the tackle. I don't think that's in question. But as far as like the big disruptive plays, we haven't really seen him do that at the college level. And so I think there's some concern if he's going to play defense at the next level. Can he do that? Is he capable of that? So to me, I think people are just viewing him as a very interesting, you know, we can try him out at several different spots, but I don't think people feel like that's something that you need to quickly snatch up, if that makes sense. So I think that's kind of what's happened there with Sione. He probably would have been well served if he really truly wants to play defense, having come back for another year and really trying to showcase this year in college that he can do some of those things at safety. But, you know, he made the choice to go, and so we'll see how this ultimately works out for him.
So, Michelle, give us an idea of the numbers. How many Utes are going to be drafted? How many are we looking at, or, you know, do you think? And how many guys are going to land in a camp somewhere?
Yeah. I'm, like, trying to remember who all. I think we'll probably see, at the very least, two taken. I think we could see anywhere up to four perhaps get drafted.
Okay. All right.
And then from there, you know, you'll see guys get camp invites and some of that kind of stuff. I know a lot of, you know, a guy like Miles Battle that didn't get invited to all that stuff. He really impressed at Pro Days. And so, you know, someone's going to take a chance on him. I don't know that they're going to draft him, but they're absolutely going to give a guy like that, that can put up some of the numbers that he did, a chance to show them what he can do in a camp. So, you know, there's a lot of guys that will get a chance in some form or another. But I wouldn't honestly expect probably more than four guys to get taken. And that might be a little optimistic.
Check out all of Michelle's great work at KSLSports.com. Hear her on the Saturday show coming up tomorrow. And she joins us on Fridays, and we appreciate it. Thank you, Michelle.
No problem, guys. Have a great rest of your show.
Thank you, Michelle.
Michelle Bodkin, KSLSports.com. She covers the Utes. Mitch, who covers Cougs, will join us at the top of the 11 o'clock hour. Did you consume any of the draft?
A ton.
Yesterday,
I think,
Ben?
I watched basically the entire first round.
Did you watch the Belichick cast with Armpit?
I saw some of the highlights after, including that Belichick agreed to go on a show every Monday during the football season, which quite the flex from Mr. Armpit himself, from Mr. Pat McAfee. That's the greatest NFL coach of all time, certainly in our lifetime.
He did weekly radio in Boston.
Yeah, but now he's going on, you know, a Monday show, and I'm sure it was part of his contract in Boston, I'd guess.
Yeah, but he still got paid for it.
He still got paid for it, and he's still going to get paid for going on Pat McAfee.
Actually, I don't think it was part of his contract in Boston, because I think he went on the
competitor. He didn't go WEEI.
I don't know if that's the home of the Patriots.
Whoever it is.
I don't think it is. I think it's the other one. No, I think he went on WEEI.
And they're not home to the
Patriots.
They're
not home to the Patriots.
Okay.
But anyway, my point being is that this wouldn't be the first interview he did weekly for money. And it's probably a lot of money. What was Rodgers getting paid?
$1 million a year?
Yeah. And this is an easy way for ESPN to have Belichick under their umbrella.
No, I watched the Saban cast on ABC. He was awesome.
I bet he was good.
Of course he's good. You know what I mean? Like, he knows everything about football. Yeah, it's really interesting to hear him talk.
And he's been talking to the media for 50 years. I mean, he's good at it. If you've ever watched a Nick Saban press conference, he's really good at it. He's not like Bill Belichick played this weird grumbly character, and he has to evolve a little bit to be a media figure. That's not Saban. Saban, everybody, like the press conferences with Saban that went viral were always like crusty Saban. That was like 5% of Saban's press conferences. You know what I mean? Like, he was a pretty articulate, likable guy. And was in front of the media all the time. So I'm not surprised that he crushed it.
And
I'm sure
college coaches at that level are in the talking business.
Well,
you are talking
to
parents, you're talking to kids, you're talking to donors. Yeah.
Players come and go, you're there.
You're a seller. You are constantly wheeling and dealing. You're a salesman. And not only does Saban know everything about football, he's also a good talker because he's in the talking business. So he did that very well. I thought he was really cool. I cannot wait to hear him on Saturdays this year. He will sound so good.
My thoughts real quick overall on the draft. You want to dig in?
Do you want to save the top three?
No, we have a couple minutes.
Okay.
We can get to it. We've got a lot to get to in the top three. We can.
Do we?
More NBA games.
Okay. What's up?
Oh, I don't know. We could save it. We could do a long top three. You want to do that?
Sarah, you're the boss. Top three.
All right. We'll do that coming up next. Stay tuned. Jake and Ben on a Friday. Thanks to Michelle for jumping on with us. We appreciate her doing that. We'll talk to Mitch at 11. 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
What would you do if your child disappeared and someone you trusted was responsible?
We thought he cared for McKay, when in fact he didn't care for anyone.
Listen to Ransom now at ransompodcast.com.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The murder of two men forces their families to wrestle with impossible questions. Who is forgiveness for? Does everyone deserve a second chance? Follow season 2 of The Letter, Ripple Effect, at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Break down the biggest stories of the day.
Let's go.
This is the top 3 stories of the day on KSLSports.com. On 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Jacob in 97.5 the KSL Sports Zone. We want to remind you about the Hercules Hero of the Week. Submit your nominate the sports volunteer you know. Submit your nomination at kslsports.com/contest and listen every Thursday afternoon to JJ and Alex for the winner. Help us celebrate the efforts of those volunteers making an impact with the Hercules Hero of the Week, sponsored by Hercules Credit Union. Time for the top 3 stories of the day. Brought to you by J. Brooks Jewelers. 2 locations to serve you. 1 on Winchester Street across from Fashion Place Mall. The other, Traverse Mountain in Lehigh. All right, Sarah, where are we starting today?
Number 1, NFL Day 1 recap.
You had some thoughts.
Yeah, there's so many bad, desperate GMs out there. I couldn't help but thinking about Merrill Hodge going on with DJ and PK. Obviously, Bill Belichick feels the same, that these quarterbacks stink.
6 quarterbacks in the top 12?
And none of them are any good.
I think I said 5 in the top 15, and they outdid that.
Teams were just desperate. These desperate franchises to take a quarterback are way over. I mean, I liked Michael Penix at Washington.
Yeah, so that's the most controversial pick.
To the Falcons?
Because they just signed Kirk Cousins to a $108 million deal. And then you draft Michael Penix with the 8th overall pick, who's, A, not going to play for 2 years, because that's at least how long Kirk Cousins
that's his guarantee. Money. Yeah.
But it could be as long as 4. And Michael Penix is the oldest player of all the quarterbacks.
See, it's funny that was...
Because if he doesn't play for 4 years, he'll be 27.
That's what's... It's funny what was controversial. I actually really like that concept if you're the Falcons.
I'm 100% with
you. You've got a guy and then bring along a young player. I mean, that...
Because Cousins is, what, 35?
Yeah, exactly. That actually makes a lot of sense.
I'm with you. The way we hammer all these teams for throwing these quarterbacks out there from day one.
And no, I love that.
Zach Wilson's going to die. Thank you. Congrats. You've wasted a number 2 overall pick because you've given Zach Wilson absolutely no chance. And the same can go for Mac Jones and so many of these guys that never get a chance to marinate versus Aaron Rodgers, Jordan Love, Joe Flacco, notably, like these guys who get a chance to sit back and play or wait.
Mahomes took a year.
Yeah, right. It's good for you.
Yeah.
It's good for you. I get that it felt steep, especially right after you paid $108 million for Cousins. But if in 5 years from now Michael Penix is the best quarterback, who cares?
But you don't take Michael Penix at 8.
Probably could have gotten him later is the thing. You could have...
Or somebody as good as him.
You
I mean, it's not
gotten
like...
gotten him at 18.
No, that feels to me like that was a panic buy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, oh, the toilet paper is flying off the shelves! We've got to get to Costco now. We've got to take this guy at 8. It's like, well, I don't know. If you are trying to win right now with Kirk Cousins and are going to develop a quarterback for tomorrow, well, you could probably find a really nice piece for Kirk Cousins or the defense or whatever and find Michael Penix later in the draft. Either actual Michael Penix later in the draft or a quarterback that's...
Joe Milton, whatever. Yeah, who cares?
That you can bring along or whatever.
Yeah.
Like... Felt like there was a run on quarterbacks and Atlanta panicked. Like, that may have been their plan going into the draft. Like, all right, we're going to trade back, or we like Michael, so we're going to do this, or pick him later, or whatever. And all of a sudden, there's a run on quarterbacks, and they're like, take him at 8.
Got to go. Bo Pix ends up getting taken by the...
By the donks.
By the donkeys. So Zach Wilson's already got together the next sword
hashtag
of Damocles hanging over his head.
Let's ride. You know what? Where Zach is, he just needs... He needs an opportunity on the field. And so you got to go beat out a rookie.
But here's the funny thing. They're like the exact same age, right? They're 6 months apart because Zach was so young when he came into the NFL.
Well, the idea is Bo Nix is going to be better, which I'm not convinced that he is. But that's why you take a quarterback at 12. But he shouldn't be going 12. That's the
problem. Agreed.
Like, think of the evaluation process and all this stuff.
But here's the flaw that every general manager has. Are you going to go with the guy who you swapped a sixth round pick and a seventh round pick for, or the guy you drafted 12?
But,
and who are you going to give 10 extra chances to? The guy you drafted 12, because you've got to look right.
But here is the problem. You're putting first round expectation.
Yes.
On somebody who's not that.
Correct.
So these general managers are so dumb because they're betting their careers on somebody who's not even going to have the opportunity to succeed. And they're going to fail six times. And they're going to give up on him in 2 years and hope, like, that everybody hates the quarterback enough that they'll forget who drafted him.
Yep.
And you'll be able to keep your job for whatever. It happened to Bill Belichick. Speaking of Bill, who hates all these quarterbacks,
yeah.
It happened to him where he had to draft a quarterback because of circumstance. And everybody was telling him he had to draft a quarterback and leaned on him, and he picked Mac Jones,
yep.
Who was not him, as LeBron would say.
Correct.
About hot dog. It's not him. And his arm twisted in, and then that cost Bill his job. And it's like, if the circumstance isn't there, it's not there. You know, the best GMs, Ben, and maybe we can salvage an NBA conversation out of this too. Like, the best GMs are the ones that take advantage of circumstance, not let circumstance dictate to them. You know what I mean?
You play the card that's dealt. Like, absolutely.
Andy Reid liked a quarterback in the draft. And so he said, not everybody is liking this Patrick Mahomes character. I think we can probably get him around here. They made a move. They traded in the draft to make sure and get their guy. They took advantage. Who'd they trade with? But they took advantage of a team that didn't need that pick or had other priorities or whatever, and they slid in and they got their guy. You take advantage of the opportunities. You don't let opportunity dictate to you. And they had Alex Smith. They didn't have to draft a quarterback.
No, they didn't.
They did it at their luxury. I mean,
it's why, in theory, I don't mind what Atlanta did.
I agree.
If Atlanta feels like Michael Penix was the best player on the board, I do agree. You take best player available.
But now you have pressure on him to be the next franchise quarterback for the Atlanta Falcons.
Yeah.
And there is no guarantee that he's going to be that. And he'll be older, to your point.
But you know what? I also like the theory that once Cousins is gone, Cousins is good enough to win you what? I mean, you and I can debate.
Well, Cousins,
but it's like 10 to 12 games a year.
And he could easily get hurt. I mean, he has not been rock
but
solid.
But let's assume he stays healthy.
Yeah.
He's going to get you 12 to 15 wins a year as long as he's there. The idea is when Cousins is done, you don't have to drop to 4 wins and have to totally rebuild and then hope Penix is the guy.
Yeah.
You can just go from a 12-win team to a 12-win team because Penix is ready to go right away, and you never have that drop-off because you probably can't get the quarterback you're looking for in the top 10 if you're drafting 24, 25 without giving up all your future draft capital.
But that's the point, is he's not a top 10 guy.
That would be the question. Now, clearly Atlanta thinks he is.
What if Lawrence Taylor was on the Dern board?
Sure.
You know
Absolutely.
What I mean?
Like, they're going to be questioned.
There are other players that play other positions that can make a tremendous impact.
And you know what? They need a defensive end. They need an offensive lineman. They need help around Kirk Cousins. Absolutely. There is a lot they could do. But you know what they did last year? They had a really good running back from BYU.
Algier,
and they went undrafted Bijan Robinson. And they said, well, yeah, Algier's great. 1,000 yards as a rookie. We think Bijan's better, and we're going to go with Bijan, and we're going to have a two-headed monster. And they've not been afraid to do that in the past, and everyone liked Bijan last year as well. Now, it worked once. It doesn't mean it's going to work again.
I bet these defensive players that went in the middle of the first, real quick before we move on, Latu out of...
Well, I love him.
Out of UCLA. And then there was, three D linemen starting with Latu. Murphy, defensive tackle, went 16. And then Dallas Turner, another edge rusher, went at 17. I bet you those guys turn out to be really good. And those teams get a ton of value out of those picks because the fact that there wasn't a defensive player taken for the first 14 tells you that all these teams are picking as a fad. They're picking.
Yes.
It's oh, gotta get these offensive players. There's a run that's not necessarily value. You know, you're telling me that you got the top defensive player in the draft
at 14.
At 15.
15. Yeah.
At 15.
Yeah. Oh, everyone loves this D-tackle from Texas. I'd be lying if I told you I'd do anything about him.
You got, let's say he turns out to be a franchise-changing D-tackle, which is a crazy important position. It's not glamorous, but it is crazy important in the NFL.
Ask Vince Wilfork.
And you got that at 16.
Right.
Home run.
Yeah, great value.
So, you know, it's funny. The NFL, there's a lot of dumb general managers out there. And the Falcons were, it's so funny when teams are criticized for the wrong thing.
I'm with
you. How dare you take Penix when you've got Kirk Cousins under contract for two guaranteed years? It's like, well, yeah, that's I kind of like that strategy.
Who do you think set themselves back further, Atlanta or the Patriots? Patriots take Drake May, a quarterback at 3, and he's going to start day one.
Oh, the Patriots.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So
that
like,
guy is tostada so already. He loses before the ball's even snapped because he's got a rookie coach.
Right. We can hammer the Falcons. And look, and maybe Drake May figures it out. But you understand what I'm saying. The idea that like the failure aspect of this eighth pick is there for Atlanta, but it's not worse than the failure aspect of what happens if Drake May is not good or if Jaden Daniels is not good in Washington.
I could give you arguments for the top three picks on how they're not going to be good.
Of course. Absolutely. And you know what? Atlanta doesn't have to answer that because Atlanta doesn't have to show Michael Penix to anybody. Now, they can say, oh, we didn't get the edge rusher we wanted in the first round. They'll draft him in the second round, and if he can produce, they'll be fine. By the way, they've done a very good job drafting. That GM's been a very good drafter, including getting Algier in the seventh round, got Clark Phillips in the fifth round last year, I think. He's done a very good job.
All right.
Number two, more game three of NBA playoff series.
Lakers are toast. All this talk about the Lakers and Warriors and who's going to make a deeper run when they get in the postseason. Well, the Warriors didn't make it.
Yep, neither.
And the Lakers got eliminated in three games because no one's ever come back from down 3-0, and Lakers ain't going to do it against this Nuggets team.
It's not going to be. It's not going to be the Lakers. No, they are done. And you know what? They're the type of team that'd lay down in game four, too, because it's over.
Well, they'll come out. I bet. You know what I bet they'll do? Build a 10-point first-half lead, get trounced in the second half. And Denver's going to get a week off for Reggie Jackson to rest his ankle and Jamal Murray to figure out whatever is going on with his jump shot, and they'll be fine. And they'll have a week advantage to rest before everyone else, and that's why Denver keeps winning.
Yeah, I agree with you, Ben. The Lakers are better when LeBron lets the rest of the team play, too.
I just think they're so tired. I mean, Anthony
Davis
they're
so old
can't
and moldy.
Move by the fourth quarter.
But they don't have they have like four good players on the team total.
No, they're so horribly designed.
I mean, it's like
crazy.
The Suns.
They're horribly designed.
There's like four NBA players. And then a collection of stiffs.
But you know what? That's awesome. That's the CBA at play. That's exactly what every small market owner has wanted. I don't want the Lakers to have LeBron and AD. And even when they're old, what do? They just backfill with other max players that can step up and be ready to fill those minutes. You don't want that. That's not fair to the rest of the teams in the NBA. And they've fixed that. It's why the Warriors didn't even make the playoffs. And it's why the Lakers are going to get bounced in the first round. And you know what? It's going to catch up to Denver, too. It already is because they're playing Reggie Jackson 20 minutes a game, who's not very good.
You know, the buying into LeBron comes with so much. He really does move in. He's like a unwanted family member that moves in or a family member that you're trying to help that it turns out that all they do is eat all your food, and they've been there for 2 years.
He's cool at first. He comes in. He goes grocery shopping. He fills. Oh, he's like, have whatever you want. Have whatever you want. I filled the fridge. Whatever you want. It's great for everybody. This is going to be awesome. And then by week four, you're like, ugh.
Oh, man, everything's gone.
Everything's gone.
Everything's
gone. He only went to the grocery store once.
All the resources, like everything. He tells you what you're supposed to buy.
Parks behind you in the driveway every day.
Like, it really is that.
But you didn't get the title.
The Lakers win. No, the Mickey Mouse title doesn't count.
You got the bubble
title.
It
really doesn't.
Lakers fans will tell you it did.
That is the most LeBron thing ever.
Lakers fans will tell you it did.
That is, honestly, wins a fake title, and then he can be like, see, it was a success. No, it wasn't.
The other game last night, Joel Embiid just kicking guys in the groin, trying to dislocate knees, laying on the floor. Meanwhile, having Bell's palsy and half of his face collapsing on him. It is the weirdest.
That is a crazy story.
It's crazy. And then he scored 50 on, how many shots did he take?
19.
50 points on 19 shots. Look, Joel is goofy. He's kind of hard to watch sometimes. I hate the flopping stuff.
He's so dominant.
Yeah. And then 50 points on 19 shots? What? That's not possible. You don't get to do that. 5 of 7 from 3, 19 of 21 from the free throw line. He truly was awesome.
Well, he's huge.
Yeah. He's unstoppable.
Huge.
Yeah.
And so highly skilled. It's the reason why people weren't sure if he could even step foot on a basketball court again, and he still went number 3.
Yeah.
because big players are just not supposed to be that skilled.
Yep.
And the ones that are Hakeem Olajuwon.
Ralph
Sampson.
There's not a lot of people ever. And those guys weren't even half as heavy as Joel was, where Joel can lean on you and just wear you out through the whole game.
Obviously, Nikola Jokic, another example of a highly skilled big. But you're just not supposed to be able to do that. And he's amazing. And the Bell's palsy thing is wild.
Really wild.
I mean, that's a wild thing. But what are the Knicks going to do about that? What are you going to do? You're going to lose. A guy gets 50 points on 19 shots. They're going to win 100% of the time.
While both hurt and suffering from it's not a stroke, but it looks like it. I mean, your face collapses on you. You can't close one of your eyes. It's crazy. Tonight's games, the late game. Timberwolves-Suns, see if the Timberwolves can go up 3-0 and end the Suns' season, essentially. Clippers at Mavs. Big game here. Whoever takes a 2-1 series lead is going to feel really good because either the Clippers have regained home court advantage, not that I think it matters that much, or the Mavericks will go up 2-1 with, three more home games to play left in the series, or two more home games left to play, so they could just take care of home court advantage and win there. And then how about this?
Wait. So answer me something real quick before we move on from the Clippers. Does it work with Kawhi or not? Because he was a detriment to his team in the last game. Like, you think, oh, Kawhi's playing. Oh, that's going to give him a better chance. It ruined their flow, and he was bad.
The problem with the Clippers this year, when they've been really good, they play fast, and when they're really bad, they play slow. And they kind of just walk to their spots and just kind of do their thing. And that's what they did all through the fourth quarter. They just could not generate an open look, which is why the Mavericks went on that 14-0 run. Like, they just pass the ball and that guy takes the shot. And they pass the ball and that guy takes a shot, but there's no creativity. There's nothing exciting. There's no off-ball movement.
Yeah.
That's why they're bad. And if Kawhi's hurt and can't move at 100%, they're going to slow down to play his speed. And like I just said, they're at their worst when they're playing slow. And that's going to be really bad for them. Tonight's games, like I mentioned, Clippers, Mavs. How about this? There's a 3:30 game today, our time.
Sweet.
You're going to go home. You're going to get the kids from school, and Bucks Pacers tips off at 3:30.
Crank up some NBA basketball.
Because they wanted to do the triple header. Also, they wanted to get in and get some eyeballs before the NBA draft or the NFL draft. So, Bucks Pacers. We'll see if Milwaukee can travel after falling down or tying the series 1-1, falling to Indiana in game 2.
Next.
Number 3, Cougs are returning to BYU.
Yeah, last night we got the news that Richie Saunders was returning. And then this morning, Dallin Hall recommitting to Kevin Young. And BYU, Mark Pope, striking out on getting a lot of these guys to follow him. And that was kind of the expectation when you hire a coach is you're going to, A, bring some of your guys as a bridge, and then, B, recruit next year. All the kids that were committed to Kentucky have really left. They have abandoned him in mass. They're either going to the draft or they're following Calipari to Arkansas.
Ben, and I don't know the backstory of these guys. Let me enter into saying this that I don't know, but I've been telling you for a while that BYU there are more reasons than just a coach to go to BYU. There's more reasons that people are connected to that university and go to that university, other than just I want to play for Mark Pope, or other than just high level basketball. Honestly, right. And so I think in the future they will be better at retaining their players than other programs.
I think that's fair. The question is, can you win with those players? Like, Dallin Hall is very good. Richie Saunders is very good. They won because they had transfers in Jackson Robinson, Ali Khalifa, and things like that. Those kids left.
Well, the answer is going to have to be yes, because they don't have another option. Yeah. So
now Kevin Young can maybe get some recruits. Now he can get some kids to transfer in the same way Mark Pope did.
Yeah.
And you've got to win with them too. You just can't have Kevin Young leave and take everybody with him.
Here's the thing. I think you hire Kevin Young not because you're hiring a recruiter. In fact, if you're hiring an NBA guy as a recruiter, I mean, you're fishing in the wrong pond. You're hiring an NBA guy to make sure that you have the highest skilled team and the best game plan on the floor every night. That's going to be your edge. Your edge isn't ever going to be uber athletic mercenary type players that are coming in and playing for a big bag of cash.
Yeah.
To bide their time to go to the NBA. That's never going to be BYU's. BYU has to get a team full of, I don't know, Ben, where do you want to put the number? I'd put it anywhere from 60% to 80% BYU LDS.
LDS kids, yeah.
Kids.
Right, yeah.
Like, that's what it's always going to be. Now, if you can fill in around the edges with some transfers and some guys that will work there and fit into everything, because I believe those players exist, then there you go. That's your recipe for a team. But I don't think it's ever going to be like oh, BYU got the number one recruit in the country because he wants to come play for an NBA coach. I don't know if that's going to be it.
One story I will track going forward for BYU, not this year, but in several years going down the line. Let's say Colin Chandler has a bunch of success. Does Mark Pope have success coming into Utah and recruiting LDS kids to go play at Kentucky? That otherwise, obviously, Calipari never would have. Because, look, there are 4- and 5-star LDS kids in the state of Utah. We have a really great basketball culture. There's a basketball court in every church. There are good basketball players who come to this state, born in this state, go on missions, don't go on missions, whatever. Will Mark Pope channel that and come back to Utah to recruit ever? Because he could get them to leave for Kentucky, the kids that BYU has relied on. I'll be curious, and that might depend on the success he has with Colin Chandler.
I don't think there's as many of those as you think.
There are not as many, but BYU can't afford to lose many. So if you lose one or two, it's a big deal. The Hawses.
Yeah.
You know, I mean?
I know.
The Chandlers,
I just don't,
the Hawses,
etc. Like, how many of those have honestly existed?
Not a lot. That would have been the lifeblood of BYU's program for a very long time.
I'm saying they exist. Like, Toulson was recruited by Kentucky, right, when he was transferring from UVU. And, like, you know, obviously, I'm trying to think, you know, like the Jabari Parkers of the world. But I don't know how many of those guys Pope's even going to be going after.
Maybe not. But I will be curious if he does. That's something I'm going to be tracking. Will he come back to look at those kids if he feels like he has success?
All right, stay tuned. We'll have more coming up next. Jake and Ben, 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
It's finally time to say goodbye to the snow and hello to spring, and right now is the best time to spring into adventure in an RV from a Motorsportsland RV Center. Through this week, come check out Motorsportsland's season kickoff event and find the RV you've been dreaming of. Save thousands and even tens of thousands off MSRP and find your next adventure at a Motorsportsland RV Center today.
Let Motorsportsland help you get away.
Motorsportsland.com.
Hey, Casey Scott here, and I want to tell you about my podcast, Project Recovery, sponsored by Reprieve Recovery. It's a podcast about addiction, but more importantly, it's about recovery. My co-host, Dr. Matt Woolley, and I hear stories about overcoming addiction and going from rock bottom to living a healthier and sober lifestyle.
We also share strategies with people at all stages of recovery, and we hope it'll help you find what works best for you, and we can support one another. That's Project Recovery, a KSL podcast. Subscribe for free anywhere you listen to podcasts.
911, what's your emergency?
They kidnapped my son.
What would you do if your child disappeared and someone you trusted was responsible?
We thought he cared for McKay, when in fact he didn't care for anyone.
Listen to Ransom now at ransompodcast.com.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Two young fathers are shot to death outside an iconic Utah restaurant.
I said, your dad has been hurt really bad.
The grief was disorienting for those left behind until one choice changed everything.
I just remember writing this letter, and it wasn't me writing it.
Can a personal decision shape generations?
We're all falling for this guy's trick.
I'm Amy Donaldson. Season 2 of The Letter, Ripple Effect, is available now. Follow us at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
The sports you love, the teams you can't live without.
Get a sense of urgency!
This is Jake Scott and Ben Anderson on 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Jake Scott, Ben Anderson. McKay Hillstead's headed for Provo, Ben. Any thoughts? The Utah State quarterback jumps into the portal. He's headed south for Provo.
Well, it was kind of interesting because everything we had heard was that BYU was not really going to look to add another QB transfer.
Well, that was never true.
That was never true. And also, like, my thought would be, oh, well, of course you're going to take a guy if he's an absolute grand slam and he's going to be the best player in that quarterback room. Like, yeah, if somebody pops up and wants to transfer your school who's better than who you already have, you take him. But I don't know if you just take somebody to take somebody, which makes me question, wait, is McKay Hillstead the best player in that quarterback room?
The answer is maybe.
Maybe.
And that answer should really alarm everybody.
That's kind of the problem. With all due respect, I remember I was there. I remember McKay Hillstead jumping in and having his big breakout game and how exciting that was for everybody. That was really cool at Utah State last year. Under-recruited here locally, not a huge player, questions about his size, whether he was big enough. That was really cool. That was a great story. Probably not what BYU wants to rely on being a Big 12 program going forward, with all due respect.
Oh, I think he may actually end up being good, but what year has he been?
Is he just coming off his freshman season?
He's a sophomore.
Yeah.
He's a true sophomore.
Yeah.
A true sophomore transfer from Utah State should not be the, no offense to him, should not be the best quarterback in the room day one. And I don't even know if that's true, honestly. But the problem is, Ben, and we've been, the problem existed last year. The recipe for success for BYU football to accomplish expectations have always hinged on the quarterback. Always. The recipe to win at other places, a la the University of Utah, that has not been the case. At BYU,
tis the case.
Ben, when the wheels started coming off toward the end of Lavelle's career, and talk to Hans about this, he lived it. They went from Steve Sarkisian to Brandon Doman. And there was like a 3-year gap there, if I'm doing my math right, of a lot of Paul Shoemakers and a whole lot of nothing.
Yep.
And Lavelle went out on a 500 season because he hadn't figured out that Brandon Doman wasn't a safety and was a quarterback. And then when they had a quarterback, Brandon Doman, who spent years in the NFL, he was a guy. Gary Croton was a genius. Ben, I lived through that too. Offensive genius,
yep.
Which was what was thrown around. And what happened after Brandon Doman? 3 losing seasons in a row, a lot of Matt Berry. A lot of young John Beck, to the point, like, I'd compare a young John Beck to McKay Hillstead. Like, maybe you're going to be good someday,
maybe, yeah.
But you're a true sophomore, you know? So a lot of young John Beck, a lot of Matt Berry, a lot of L's. Then they go John Beck to Max Hall back-to-back. Ben, Bronco won how many games with those two quarterbacks? The last 2 years of John Beck and 3 years of Max Hall. So 5 years, and they won 50 games or something like that?
Yeah, a lot.
No, maybe not 50, because
right.
John. But anyway, you had a guy. Then you miss on Jake Heaps. And there's a lot of, well, the wheels are coming off, and BYU played a lot of mediocre football until they reinvented their whole roster around Taysom Hill, which was just a gimmick anyway. And then what happened after Taysom Hill?
A little bit of a questionable football, then they get Zach Wilson.
And a young Zach Wilson was part of the questionable. Okay, yeah. Again, coming back to McKay Hillstead. But if BYU has to win now and has to have a good year next year, they're in a lot of trouble. Because I don't think they've got a guy.
I don't.
And I've thought, by the way, this isn't a revelation to me today. I've been worried about this for 2 years.
Yes, you've been talking about it the entire time we've been doing this show together. If BYU has to make a bowl game this year, and I know you hate predictions because we don't know what's going to happen, like, I don't feel confident saying I'm positive BYU is going to make a bowl game this year because I don't know what's going on at the running back. I don't know what's going on at quarterback.
And by the way, I don't want to hear at all any of this, well, if we play this guy, he makes the run game better. That is Utah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is not BYU. I want to hear this guy slings it all over the field and we're going to turn him loose. That's BYU.
And the joke is it doesn't actually work at Utah either.
Well, right. See, really, last year.
Yeah, it doesn't work at Utah either.
It works at Utah a lot better than other places. But yeah, Utah hasn't been at their pinnacle unless they have somebody who's semi-competent at the quarterback position.
You
got to
have both. You can't have one or the other anymore.
But I don't think Cam Rising is like an NFL dude.
No, of course not.
That's where he's going. But he's good at the position. Like Brian Johnson wasn't an NFL dude, but he was really good at the position.
He's a great college quarterback. That's like, all you need. BYU doesn't need NFL quarterbacks. You need great college quarterbacks.
I think BYU needs
They just NFL need great guys. College quarterbacks.
They need NFL guys. No, because great college quarterback and not an NFL guy implies dual threat and all this other stuff. Stop messing with any of that. That's not...
I need guys who can win in college. I don't care if they can play in the NFL at all.
But it's how you win at BYU. That's the point. It's how do you win at BYU. Like, I don't know if Cam Rising would win. I don't know if Cam Rising would be as successful at BYU.
Hmm. Interesting.
That's not how they've won there.
Sure.
Riley Nelson didn't win big, and I'm not saying Riley Nelson
careful.
And Cam Rising.
You're going to get yourself in trouble.
I'm not putting them on the same level. But he was the hybrid, we're going to move it anyway. We're going to move it on a wing and a prayer. Any way that we can get it up the field with this plucky, remember Bronco used to use all these adjectives about him, remember, you know, plucky and scrappy and shows a lot of heart and whatever. That was the offense, and that was not a successful period at BYU.
Well, and here's the problem. There's a real chance after having six quarterbacks drafted in the first round yesterday that Keaton Slovis might get drafted. A lot of people had him top 10 on their quarterback board. Had him top 10 on their board. If Keaton gets drafted, he's their third straight NFL quarterback that they've had.
He doesn't even count as a BYU guy. No offense
but
to him.
But he was there this year, and they still didn't win. Fine. He is that guy, and they didn't win.
They dropped him in out of nowhere, and they said, hey, go play with this team, and it didn't succeed. I don't know. Did that even count? Is anybody even going to remember that Keaton Slow? I mean, he might as well be Jake Bentley for the Utes. I mean.
He played eight games, eight-ish.
So... I don't know. That doesn't prove anything. A-Rod isn't walking around taking credit for Keaton Slovis, I'll tell you that.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, if he does well in the NFL, he will.
I told him to do that.
Yeah, absolutely.
See that right there? I taught him that. All right, stay tuned. Mitch Harper, we can run this stuff by Mitch.
Absolutely.
Coming up next, 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
It's finally time to say goodbye to the snow and hello to spring, and right now is the best time to spring into adventure in an RV from a Motorsportsland RV Center. Through this week, come check out Motorsportsland's season kickoff event and find the RV you've been dreaming of. Save thousands and even tens of thousands off MSRP and find your next adventure at a Motorsportsland RV Center today.
Let Motorsportsland help you get away.
Motorsportsland.com.
Hey, Casey Scott here, and I want to tell you about my podcast, Project Recovery, sponsored by Reprieve Recovery. It's a podcast about addiction, but more importantly, it's about recovery. My co-host, Dr. Matt Woolley, and I hear stories about overcoming addiction and going from rock bottom to living a healthier and sober lifestyle.
We also share strategies with people at all stages of recovery, and we hope it'll help you find what works best for you, and we can support one another. That's Project Recovery, a KSL podcast. Subscribe for free anywhere you listen to podcasts.